And I've been next to rivers with thunderous, chaotic, tumultuous rapids. And in theory, I could have stood on the edge of the river. But no, not even 10 feet away from the edge felt safe. 30 feet maybe, up on a little hill, it felt safe to look down at these tumultuous rapids. I've been at the edge of rivers where there was a strong current. I said, oh, you know, I don't know if I should, probably I shouldn't be in that current, in that river. But I felt safe enough to be right on the edge, just looking in and watching it all. And then I've been next to rivers where it was peaceful and very calm current and nice temperature of water. And it was a warm day. And it was just delightful to get into the water and sometimes delightful to be carried by the current. Once in West Virginia, there was a place where just below the rapids, you can get in the water and the current would carry you down to an eddy and the eddy would turn you around and carry you equally far upriver to where you started. It was kind of pretty cool to be being carried upriver in a, you know, against the current, they say, but. So there's all these different ways of being by river, depending on the nature of the river. And I use this analogy for thinking that it's good to be able to step back or watch and see the nature of our thoughts, to be wise about them, because there are some thoughts, some currents of thinking that maybe it's better to be up on the hill 30 feet away, watching them go by, because they're just too tumultuous and too dangerous to be anywhere close to where they're churning away. And some of them actually, if you get caught in them, you fall in the river, those thoughts. It's not just rapids, but it'll take you over the waterfall if you're not careful. So it's better to kind of watch them from a distance. There are other thoughts where you can kind of, they can go by, and you can stand there on the edge of the river of thinking and just watch them go by. And you see, well, that's an interesting thought. Those are powerful thoughts, but there's no danger of falling in. But you have this, you know, from the safety of the shore, you're just watching them go by and it's maybe fascinating or maybe not. And there are some thoughts that are peaceful and quiet and it seems completely appropriate and actually helpful even to get into the current of those thoughts and participate and maybe even paddle along and see where the train of thoughts, the current of thinking is going to take you as it unfolds and moves through you. So depending on the kind of thoughts we have, we might have a different relationship. We might stand closer or further away. And that requires being able to have the capacity to be mindful of thinking. And in regard to thinking, I think it's appropriate to use a language of observing, be able to watch our thoughts as they come by, as they arise, as they pass. And it's a very powerful thing when mindfulness is strong enough that we can not be necessarily in the current of thinking, caught in the river of it, but we can watch it. And I think as mindfulness develops, the stance, the way in which we observe thinking, whether it's strong or weak or peaceful or not so peaceful, I associate with sitting on a nice, comfortable day, leaning against the oak tree at the edge of the river and just watching the current go by. And we're not inclined whatsoever to get involved, to get into the river, to react, to be for or against it. We're just content to watch the ripples in the river and the flow going by. And it can be actually very peaceful to just watch it go by as long as we don't start judging the little currents and the ripples of waves on the river or the leaves that are floating on the river. We don't kind of like chase after them to make a nice necklace of leaves or try to be the person who has the best leaves on the planet or something. It just, everything's just watching it go by, watching it go by, and it can be quite peaceful relationship with our thinking. And it doesn't matter if the thoughts are, if you allow me or pardon me for saying, something like this. It doesn't matter if the thoughts are ugly thoughts or beautiful thoughts. They just, you know, it's okay. We're not going to get involved with them. We don't take them personally. We don't define ourselves by the thoughts that are flowing by. We're not invested in them. We don't get involved in them. It's a wonderful thing, this capacity to step back, sit back, and just kind of watch and see. It gives us a lot of wisdom, can give us wisdom, about how further to engage in thoughts, when maybe to step further away, when it's appropriate to get into the river with the thoughts, which it definitely is sometimes in daily life and the life we live. But in meditation, I think the wisest kind of stance is that of leaning, if you can get to it, kind of just resting, being at ease, resting against the tree trunk, and just watching all the thoughts go by. Now, learning to be mindful of thinking is very helpful, but also has its challenges. It can be difficult. There are some people, when you talk about being mindful of thinking, have no clue what you're thinking, what you're talking about. There's no reference point for how to do that. And I can't really explain why that's the case for some people. Maybe it's because for me, I've been doing this for so long, it's almost second nature. Of course, you can do it, but I don't remember what it was like 50 years ago. What I suspect is that, and I've seen this in me a little bit, that I do this, that we're so identified with thinking, we're so involved in it, it's kind of like, it isn't like we conclude, I think, therefore I am. It's, I am my thinking. And who I am and thinking are inseparable. And maybe it's a bit like, without a mirror, the eyes, if your eyes can see, the eyes can't see themselves. And maybe it's a little bit the same thing. If you're too invested, involved with thinking, too identified with it, it's almost like you can't really step out of that river to recognize what you're thinking about. And for some people, it's a slow process of beginning to be able to see their thinking. Some of it comes just from doing the practice, and slowly over time, a lot of things just develop. A lot of the instructions we give will become relevant at some point. You don't have to worry that they have to be relevant today. But there's a few things you can do with thinking, that mindfulness of thinking, that can help. One is, if you're able to tell yourself, tell yourself that what you're thinking, maybe even after the fact. You know, oh, I was thinking about lunch. Those were lunch thoughts. And, you know, I was thinking about what to wear at the river today, or whatever it might be. And that kind of, this is kind of a self-talk. But if a person really has a hard time seeing and recognizing thinking, that exercise of repeating to yourself what you just were thinking about, then you might slowly begin to get a better handle to recognize thinking when it happens. And there might be enough, and you know, someone asks you, what are you thinking right now? You might be able to tell yourself, answer the question, I was thinking about lunch. I was thinking about you, whatever it might be. So that is a way of starting to get a handle on this world of thinking. If you can recognize that you're in thought enough, then it might be possible that any of you let go of the thoughts and come back to breathing. Even if you can't let go of your thoughts, just come back to breathing and connect to it. That movement begins creating a little bit more space between you and your thinking. And so you're not so involved, caught in it. There's a saying that some of us sometimes are so distracted by our distractions, we don't know we're distracted. We're so involved. And why are we so involved in thinking? What pulls us in? What's the allure of those thoughts? Why do they seem so important? They can seem so important in the moment, but in a week, we don't even remember what we were thinking a week ago, or in a day. Why are we willing to invest so much energy and so much attention into the world of thinking? And I think there's probably many answers to that. One of them that I've often teach about is that many of our thoughts have one person who's the main character of the play. And so it's very interesting. That person's just a very interesting character and happens to be you. Somehow you're there involved. And so it's very personal. And so it's very interesting, you know, this personal scenario and all that. Some people are very organized or oriented towards acquisitions, acquiring pleasure or comfort or things or people or whatever. And that's where they feel a sense of success or they feel something. And so the thoughts are what guides them or supports them or fantasizes them about what they want. And somehow that's how they're going to get what they want, is to think about it and plan. Some people think a lot because they're scared. And the thoughts are the way they're trying to make themselves safe and to plan ahead or to just get a lay of the land or something. And so it feels very important to think, because how else can I figure out how to make myself safe in this situation? But on whatever way, whatever the reason is, often it comes with great authority, like this is important. But is it always that important? And the proposal for people doing meditation is that a lot of our thinking is not that important while we're meditating. You know, it's like, yes, it might be important to, you know, watch a particular website regularly, and you don't want to miss it. You know, every day you want to check into a website or something. But you don't bring your device with you into the shower in order to keep looking, right? I don't think people do that. I've never seen anyone who probably someone has done it, made a waterproof iPad and posted it in the shower. Because then you won't miss anything then. Heaven forbid that you miss a thought. But it's common that we put things aside so we can do other things. So with meditation, we are putting some things aside, and what we're putting aside is not necessarily our thinking, but we're putting aside the idea that thinking is important. And so we're not in meditation going to invest ourselves in it, but what we'll have to do is notice how we do invest ourselves. And I've kind of sometimes felt very clearly the glue that I felt was between me and my thinking. It seemed like it was a glue, like the separate pull apart, like that's hard, you know, because this glue is hardened or something. And sometimes it's felt a little bit like an elastic band, like maybe the glue hadn't hardened completely. And I could pull away a little bit, but if I got far enough away, it kind of like snapped back in again. It's not necessarily you have that experience, but I'm kind of telling you a little bit some of the variations and ways in which thinking can be experienced, with the hope that it makes you a little more curious how it is for you. What is your relationship to your thoughts? Because without some study and interest in your relationship to thinking, how you get involved in them, how you react to them, whether it's unconscious, subconscious, or very consciously, it's going to be hard to learn how to be mindful of thinking, to be leaning against that oak tree and just observe them go by without getting involved, without picking them up. And this is a very important skill to learn, because thinking can be tumultuous. Thinkings can lead us astray. Not only can take us over the waterfall, if we're not careful how we're going down the current, if the river splits in two directions, you might end up going on the wrong direction and someplace where you weren't hoping to go. So it's been said by psychologists that one of the leading causes for depression is rumination. And rumination is kind of like a cows ruminate. So it's like taking the same idea and just repeating it and telling the same story and reflecting and thinking. And it's like, you know, I don't know if it's, maybe it doesn't, not respectful enough to liken it to a cow chewing its cud, chewing its grass. But but the stories we tell ourselves, the ideas we tell ourselves, if they're repeated over and over again, the mood, the impact of those accumulates over time. So if we're telling ourselves mean things to ourselves, you know, you foolish person, how could you have done that? You know, you did it wrong. You're an embarrassment to the human race. You're an embarrassment to mammals, whatever it might be. You know, it just, to hear that over and over again is, you know, it slowly, maybe quickly, it's kind of demoralizing. It kind of pulls the foundation from under us, and doubt arises and feel uncomfortable. And then the opposite can happen, that rather than, it's the opposite, but tell ourselves the same story and we can get angry and angrier at people. We can get more and more afraid about something. The predictive mind, the predictive stories the mind makes, if only this might happen. And, you know, I've made myself afraid by imagining a future and imagining how terrible it was going to be and how it was going to be a disaster and this is the end and or whatever. And so we are storytellers, human beings. And even if you don't think of yourself as a storyteller, probably your mind is. Rather than being Homo sapiens, it's possible we should be called Homo storytellers, because of how, you know, we have this amazing, rich, malleable, sophisticated mind that can think about the future, think about the past, construct all these wonderful ideas, put them all together in great stories, or debilitating stories. So to not always be involved in the storytelling mind, to be able to step out of it, step out of the rumination, to no longer be in the current of it, to be able to quiet some of the ruminating, repetitive thoughts we have, is so helpful. And so meditation is one of those ways to do it. There are other ways of doing it. Many years ago, I watched a short documentary. It was of a man who, in order to kind of clear his mind, spent the weekend doing, I think it was motorcycle racing. And somehow the racing was motorcycle, he cleared his mind of his work week and he was refreshed by Sunday and he can go to work with this kind of, you know, it was his maybe equivalent of meditating. But then he had a family and he had young children and he couldn't take the time off to do his motorcycle racing, but he really needed to do something to clear his mind. So he discovered a new hobby or new sport with a friend who would have the getaway van. He would go and drive up to a high rise under construction. And he would sneak out into the construction site in the early in the morning, no one was there, climb up to the top with a backpack that had a paraglider in it. And he would jump off the high rise down into the street, and his friend with the van would be up ahead someplace, a few blocks or many blocks, something. And by the time he got into the van, he had cleared his mind. So because that was quick and efficient, because he had to get back to his family. So, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do for this. And unfortunately, some people do things like alcohol or drugs to do this work or other risky behavior. But we have meditation. Meditation, it can be a way to learn how to clear the mind, quiet the mind enough so that we can see our thoughts and let them go by rather than being invested in them, caught in them, or reactive to them. As I've often said, one of the very best advice I ever got about thinking in meditation, maybe in life, I received it a few times, and each time I kind of went deeper maybe. And that was summarized in a little quote, "Don't be bothered by your thinking." And this idea of not being bothered, because if you think of thinking, think of thinking as a bowl of muddy water, to be bothered by it is to react to it as to stir the mud some more and keeps it water muddy rather than letting it settle. If you're not bothered by it, then it has a chance to settle. So that being has some kind of equanimity, some kind of little bit of distance, little bit of not taking it too personally, not using it to define yourself, not needing to judge it, because you know it's coming and it's going. In a week, you probably won't remember what you were thinking, those thoughts. And so maybe you don't have to get so involved or so reactive or so bothered by it. Just learn to watch it go by. So mindfulness of thinking. I think it's also helpful in regard to thinking to understand that there are different layers of thinking, or different kinds of thoughts that I think of as layers, because as we go down through the layers, what I think of as layers, I feel like we're getting closer and closer to some inner depth of who we are. And it's like coming home in some nice way. And the outermost layer, where we're kind of least at home, least kind of centered and grounded in ourselves, is what's called discursive thinking. And this is the thinking where you're having a conversation with yourself or with someone else, or the stage is set for an elaborate vision. Some people think more in images than they do in words. And so there's a whole play that's been cultivated and developed in the play and in the visions that are going on. And this is really where the storytelling mind is. And it's some version of stories, of beliefs, of analyzing things, making commentary on things. And you can, if you're mindful of doing so, it's very helpful to recognize that when you're caught up in these thoughts, especially when you get distracted from them, that there's a kind of loss of self in the process. There's a kind of disconnect with the lived experience of the moment. I mean, it's maybe most clearly if it's about past or future thoughts. We can get so pulled into the past, so pulled into the future, thinking about that, that we're no longer connected to the present. We don't feel our body. We don't know we're breathing. We're not aware of our surroundings. And there's a kind of alienation process in a certain way. Even if the thinking is very attractive and interesting, we're still at a cost of losing some three-dimensional, fuller, embodied kind of sense of presence. And some people kind of report that when they're really involved in distracted thoughts, it's kind of like the light has gone out. And when they wake up from that and mindfulness returns, it's like the room has gotten light again. It's been turned on. And so when people meditate, when we say in meditation, maybe to quiet your thoughts or let go of your thoughts, or there's some people have this idea you're not supposed to have any thoughts in meditation. That's mostly true for this discursive layer. That's really the kind of layer that we want to quiet and still. And then underneath that layer, the next layer in, are very simple thoughts. They could be full sentences that have to do with a simple commentary, simple description, simple ideas about what's happening in the present moment. So I'm sitting here, and just as I was doing this, I noticed that I have a little teeny bit of painful twinge in my left knee. And so there's a very simple thought. Oh, there's a twinge, painful twinge. Is it okay for me to keep sitting this way? That's not a story. It's just a kind of wondering. It's a wise wondering to have that. Oh, maybe it's not so good. And I quickly realize it's okay. This kind of little pain I've had many times. I know it well. This is not dangerous. So all those thoughts can happen very simply, very ordinarily. It isn't like, uh-oh, there's a twinge. And it's a Saturday. My doctor's office is closed. Now, where am I going to find a doctor to look at that I can call in? And this is going to be, I have to wait until Monday. And by then, I'll have to amputate. That's discursive thinking. Storytelling. And so there is very simple layer of just, that's a twinge. It's a little bit painful. What's that about? Let's take a look at that. Let's make sure that it's okay. Oh, it's okay. Okay, let's come back to the breath. That's kind of an innocent way of thinking. Unless you're doing that nonstop all day, it's healthy, it's normal, it's okay. To sit and meditate and recognize, I've been with my breath for quite a while now. It's been nice. But I wonder if I'm missing anything. And then open the awareness up and say, oh, yes. What I missed was that I was actually a little bit straining how I was focusing on the breathing. And now that I stepped back and took the bigger picture, I feel the strain. Okay, let's see if I can go back into the breath without that strain and just be kind of more relaxed with mindfulness of breathing. That level of kind of inner talk, if you're doing that, and some people might do it without recognizing it as thoughts because it's a quieter part of the mind than discursive thinking. But some of that can be the wisdom mind operating, helping us. But it's little sentences or sentence-like things. Then at a deeper layer is the simple layer of recognition. So it's not a sentence, not a question, not a consideration of something. But in terms of this little twinge I have in my left knee, it was just simply the recognition, a twinge. If I wanted to do something more complicated, it would be twinge in the left knee. But left knee is not really needed. It's just a twinge. And then I feel temperature, it's warm. And then I see the light of the screen in front of me, and I see the light and the colors. And then I see my hand. Seeing hand. It's just almost like one word of recognition. Oh, that's what it is. That's what it is. And this layer here is the layer that comes alive as mindfulness gets deeper and deeper. And when people who use the mental noting, which is can be a little bit more energetic than this deeper area of recognition, but it's kind of replicating where the mind is going. As we get quieter and quieter in meditation, it's about just recognizing what's happening in the moment without any more analysis or commentary, just keeping that simple. And, the breathing, you don't even the word breathing is a little bit too abstract. I'm breathing, that's breathing, a breath. It's a little bit too abstract. And you might just recognize movement, pressure, expansion, release, pulling in, just the individual sensations that make up what we label, the category we label, inhalation, exhalation, breath, breathing. And now you don't have to force the issue and try to just, but as mind gets quieter and quieter, stiller and stiller, the experience, how we experience the moment to moment becomes simpler and simpler. And just simple recognition. And when it comes to that kind of just the mind simply recognizing the particularity of the moment, it feels so satisfying. It feels like a homecoming. It feels like now it's peaceful. Now there's a deep contentment because things like discursive thinking more often than not, come from a discontent, come from a discomfort around something or wanting something different than what it is. And so to begin kind of letting go of the discursive thinking also means we're quieting the wanting mind, the aversive mind, the mind that tends to create or pump out those thoughts. So mindfulness of thinking. So as with emotions, thinking is really a composite phenomenon. It's made up of different elements. And as we be able to settle down and recognize that we're thinking, that gives us a chance to bring a clear mindfulness to the different elements of it. And now if thinking is relatively mild and weak, it might be enough just to recognize thinking, maybe even say the word thinking. And then you come back to your breathing. For those of you who are reluctant to use mental notes, because it's a little bit of technique, it might be feels like it agitates you to use this technique of mental noting, you might want to experiment to use mental noting when you find yourself involved in thinking too much, like you just can't get free of it. Sometimes that's a good time to just name it explicitly out loud in your head, inside you. Thinking, this is thinking. And sometimes to start, even if it's really, you know, if you need the SOS, you know, really help you with being really caught up in a thought storm, then sometimes being a little bit emphatic, I'm really thinking here. Wow, am I thinking? Wow, I bet I can electrify the California electrical grid with the energy behind this thinking. Just even yeah, it's a little bit of a story, right? But you want to kind of counter or meet the thinking mind with something that helps you pull away the glue, step back from it, get some distance from it. And sometimes being emphatic and saying, I am thinking. Wow, am I thinking? Sometimes we'll break the trance of those thoughts that we have. Also, what can be done is when there's a lot of thinking, either because it's repetitive, coming back over and over again, or because it just can't get off it, just because, you know, it's like, is an important component of thinking, especially discursive thinking, is the emotional foundation out of which those thoughts are coming. I sometimes call it a factory. And that if there's a lot of thinking going on, the thinking is not really the issue. I like to think of thinking as the messenger. And it's the messenger that's pointing back to the underlying emotion. So as many of you have heard me maybe say, if there's a lot of anxiety, it's not uncommon, if there's a lot of planning, it's not uncommon that anxiety underlies planning. Sometimes what underlies planning is anticipatory joy, which is nice also. But if you can recognize the underlying emotion, anticipatory joy or the anxiety, that is what you want to hold in the hands of awareness. That's what really needs your attention. And if you're constantly kind of batting away the thoughts or being upset because you're thinking a lot, it might be helpful to know you're probably missing the real important ingredient in it all, which is the underlying emotion. Sometimes there are beliefs that are operating. And sometimes you have to kind of notice that the basic attitudes, assumptions, beliefs that are operating before you can really let go of the thoughts. And that's a little bit more an analytical maybe. And then because emotions are such a big part of it, one of the things that I find very helpful to do is to notice anything in the body that's a physical manifestation of the thinking that's happening. And sometimes it's directly connected to the emotion, and sometimes it's more connected to the energetics of thinking or the attachment or the drive to think. And you see that in other people's faces, you know, their foreheads furrow really strongly and their eyes go really tight, and you feel that there's tension in the face around trying to think about something really hard. And but that tension can also be elsewhere in the face. It can be what they're doing in their hands. Some people, you know, playing with their hands a lot when they're really thinking a lot and nervous. It can be a tightness in the chest, tightness in the belly, in the shoulders sometimes go up because of the emotions connected to thinking. And sometimes you can feel like it's a buzzing energy in the head or pressure in the head that's connected to wanting to think. And I call all these things the thinking muscle, the physical kind of tension associated with thinking. And if you can recognize that tension, then it can be helpful, because it's physical, to relax that tension, to soften it. And sometimes if you can relax the thinking muscle, then the impetus to think, the energy to think, begins to abate. Because where the energy for thinking comes from sometimes is from the very tension that's driving it. It's the thinking itself. So here's a call, you know, an encouragement again. Come back into your body. Learn to, the more you can be sensitive and connected to your body and develop a heightened sensitivity to all the nuances of sensations in your body, the better handle you'll get on recognizing how to let go of thoughts, how to relax the tension that's prompting them and bringing them about. And in the end, the point is not to be a person who never thinks. The point is to be able to be at ease with our thinking, to be able to observe and be wise about thinking, to discover you have some choice about what you think. I will regularly notice what I'm thinking and say, that's interesting, but I don't think that's what I want to think about anymore. I have something else I want to think about, and I'll change directions. And there are some times where I don't do that. I really let my thinking just do whatever it wants to do. When I exercise or go swimming or go walking in the woods or something, that's a time where I give my thinking mind complete freedom to do what it wants to do without any censoring, any changing. It's fascinating to watch how it unfolds and moves and changes on its own or comes to something. And there's something very nice about doing it when exercising or walking, because I think it keeps the thinking fluid. It keeps me from getting stuck on something. If I'm kind of living my daily life sitting a lot or something, or sitting on the couch, it's so easy to somehow get stuck in the thoughts. But somehow when I go for walks in the hills, the thoughts just kind of flow like a river, and it's amazing. It's fun to watch where it goes. And sometimes it's very helpful to think thoughts. It's important to tell stories sometimes. And sometimes it's important to tell yourself better stories than you've been telling yourself. If the stories you've been telling are not happy stories, not helpful stories, it's really interesting to offer yourself an alternative story to kind of break the trance of one story. Oh, it could be another way. And in the end, my wish for all of you is that you end up becoming friends with your thinking, and you see your thoughts as your friend. There's a friendly relationship with that, that they're not your enemy, they're not your adversary, they're not your downfall, but rather they're there to support you and have this mutual friendship with them. And that friendship helps a lot if you've learned not to believe every thought, get involved with every thought, chase every thought, pick every thought up. Just let them walk, let them just go by. There's a saying in Buddhism that thoughts become like clouds in an empty sky, like a cloud in an empty sky. Clouds have no weight. They have no hard substance to them, I guess. You put your hand through them. And the sky is completely empty, but a single cloud is drifting by. And there are times when in meditation, it can feel that way. It's the mind feels so clear, so spacious, and a thought will arise, and it just seems like it's just a cloud up in the sky floating by. And nothing to pick up. It's insubstantial. It has no weight, it has no impact on us, It has no authority, just a thought that goes by. So the goal of becoming a friend, maybe to all things, so we can be wise and support all of us, self and others, live in a compassionate, kind, free way. And getting a handle and developing your mindfulness of thinking is really helpful in this regard. Don't think you're going to learn to do that overnight. That's just another discursive story that's not really helpful. But that you're going to do it, the story that's nice is that you're going to do this slowly, one step at a time, one moment of mindfulness at a time. And slowly, it'll build momentum. And slowly, you'll fill it out and understand all the little details that you have to understand. And a day will come when you'll say, I hope you'll say, I've become a friend to my thinking. And that's also a day where you'll discover it's a lot easier to become friends to other people. Be friendly. Be a friend to yourself, and you can be a friend to all people. So thank you, and I hope I haven't stirred up too much thinking. And if I have, you know what to do. Thank you.